never underestimate how shallow bass can get. I have seen them where their backs are sticking out of the water.
Time for the Angler Within podcast with Roy Bilby.
So you got to do what I do. You got to go into a Bass Pro Shops and help out for a day.
It was amazing.
I know. They called me and said, look, we're doing the catch and release pond this weekend for the kids. Can you come in on Saturday? We got Sunday covered. And I said, yeah, I can do that. I had no idea you were the guy they ended up with for Sunday by some wicked twist of fate.
It totally unrelated to each other whatsoever. That was the best part about it.
I didn't know that they had called on Boy Scouts before to come in and help with that. And when they called, you answered, and through a series of events, you got signed up for the store.
Yeah. So they reached out to our development guy and he sent an email out to everybody. I actually didn't realize what it was because there was a coinciding event that was happening out at our camping facility up in Ava. And that was Adventure Weekend, or there was like Outdoor Weekend, or I'm sorry, it was Field and Stream. And so I figured that I was just helping out at our own facility.
Yeah, and you thought they were coming to you.
Yeah, yeah. So when I called and spoke to our friend over there.
Shauna.
Shauna.
Real sweetheart.
Oh, she's amazing. But she was, both of us were confused for the first 10 minutes of the conversation. I thought she was talking about coming out to camp. And
she thought you understood you were coming into the
store. No, I didn't. So I was like, well, listen, there's only like 17 people signed up for this thing. I don't really know. Because she said she had like all these fishing rods. I said, I don't think you need that many.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to be that many people. But no, I was pleasantly surprised and went in the store and I immediately got myself a new hat and a Bass Pro Sun shirt. So I looked the part, you know, had to shamelessly plug our friends over there. And,
and you look good.
Yeah, I do look pretty good in that stuff.
Yeah.
It was amazing. I had a really, really, really good time. It's cool to see young kids who have never fished, period, you know, go in there and not only fish, but catch something. And pretty good sized bass, too.
Yeah, they had a pool full of them. And here's the interesting thing. Now, I've done that catch and release pond a number of times. And for people listening who don't know what we're talking about, Bass Pro Shops, they have these pools that they put in one of the showrooms. They fill it with water. They get it up to temperature. And they have hatchery fish brought in, get them acclimated, and then they let kids come in with a little bit of direction and leadership, fish in these ponds. They catch one, they get their picture taken, they get a bunch of free giveaways. And for some of these kids, it's the first time they've ever caught a fish, which is wild because I didn't grow up fishing in pools. But it's an opportunity to get kids starting into fishing. And so I've been involved with that a number of times. But the interesting thing is, this is the first time I've been there where they had the pool full of just bass. There was like 50, 60 bass in that pool. And the hatchery they got them from is Hinckley's, which is like 20 minutes from my house. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. That's where you got them? So, yeah, they're up in Jefferson, New York. And this was when I went in Saturday, I said, well, good. For once, they've got all bass. Most of the time, it's full of trout. And the first five or six kids will catch one, and then everything shuts down. And it's tough to get a bite. And they do that for 4 hours. So
yeah,
a lot of kids waiting in line.
Totally. But this time, because they didn't market it too heavily, there was a very manageable amount of people that came in.
And, oh, yeah.
I even had a good time just testing out other kinds of baits. You know, it was funny because she was texting you over what was working and I had my own theories on what would work with those fish. And both of us were right. Yeah. We were, you know, both correct. But at one point I threw on a long neck size 2 hook. You saw those there, like the longer neck ones that were there.
Yeah. What was working with,
I used that with a power bait worm.
Yeah.
And they were losing their minds and they were all having fun just watching the bait do its action in the water and just watching the fish go berserk trying to get to it.
When I was there Saturday, it was the one and only time that I had been there when every single kid that came in caught a fish. Every single one. That had never happened before. It was just an amazing day in that store with all these kids just having a blast. And my wife brought my grandson up, and he's never seen fish in a pool before. He thought that was kind of interesting. And I said, "Well, you want to fish one?" He's like, "Yeah." And he caught one right off the bat. And I got to unhook for him. And they're getting the camera. Next thing you know, he's in the pool hooking another one. I'm like, hey, one per customer. Okay. But he got a kick out of that. He got his bling bag with all the giveaways and stuff. It was a unique experience for him. He still talks about it. But I want to share another unique experience today and put it out to our listeners, because you can do this all over the country, and that is the Bassmaster Elite Series Marshal Program. Now, I don't know if any of our listeners have ever served as a marshal. This is where in the Elite Series, which is the top tier, these are the leading professional anglers in the world, the Bassmaster Elite Series, and they have to have a marshal in their boat to just oversee the day's events. They get a different marshal in their boat. Each day of competition, the marshal is required to record their catches, observe the way they fished, make sure they don't accidentally or intentionally break any rules, and it just keeps the playing field level. And to serve as a Bassmaster Marshal, it's easy enough. You just register as a marshal on the Bassmaster.com website or call 877-BASS-USA. I've done it a couple times, and I'll tell you what, you get a front row seat to watch these professionals fish, how they approach their day. And I'll tell you what, that most of them are very open, and they'll tell you what you're doing. They'll answer your questions. Again, they're working here, so you don't want to interfere with their day or be a distraction. But I've had unique experiences with every guy I marshaled for. I did it once the first year they came to Cayuga Lake in upstate New York, and I did it a second time on the St. Lawrence River, and both were unique experiences. Now, Cayuga, New York, is not too far from the Utica, New York Bass Pro Shops, where I started doing my pro staff work. And the first day, when I marshaled the Cayuga event, it was shortly after Don Barone, who was a writer for the Bassmaster website, did a story on me when I had broken 25,000 bass caught and released. It was like the next year. And the first day pro I had was Matt Heron. And in May of that year, he had just won the Texas Big Bass World Championship, $100,000 paycheck, and a lot of notoriety. And I got in the boat with him that first morning, and I said, "You've already made some pretty good money this year." And he kind of grinned. He goes, "Yeah, I did." And he turned to me. He said, "And I hear you've caught a lot of fish." Turns out Don Barone, who wrote the article, is pretty tight with Matt Heron and his wife. And Matt, he always camps when he's at the lake. So basically, I met him at the campground in the morning, and we rode across the lake to the check-in site in his boat. And we just got acquainted as we rode across the lake. He knew about the article, and he said, "When I was aspiring to become a professional angler, I kept a journal. I did what you did. I just kept all the notes and all that stuff. And I still have a lot of those," he said. "But now, as a touring professional for so many years, I don't have the time to do that anymore." But he kept his journals, and he's got a lot of notes and a lot of useful information that he uses as he travels across the country, which is basically I've got four decades of notes that help me when I travel and fish places I haven't been in a long time, and it helps you retain information. Now, an interesting thing about my day with Matt Heron, his program that day on that lake was fishing boat docks, and we went into this cove, this bay on the one section of Cayuga Lake, and he starts skipping a jig underneath both docks. Now, he's sponsored by Dirty Jigs, and he's got his own signature series, Matt Heron jig, and he's skipping it underneath both docks with bait casting gear. But as I'm watching him do this, some of these docks, some of them had like 8 inches of water underneath them. And it's really clear water. And it was a sunny day, so skipping docks was a great proposition. But I'm looking at how thin some of this water is, and I'm thinking to myself, he's not going to catch anything in 8 inches of water. Forgetting, of course, that this man is a touring professional, and I'm an aspiring wannabe, and he's pulling some nice largemouth out of those docks that only have 8-10 inches of water underneath them. It really opened my eyes to how shallow these fish can get under some of these docks. I mean, a lot of docks, when I fish docks, I bypass a lot of them. Not enough water underneath that one. Well, that was then. This is now. I have changed my approach to fishing docks. I fish them all now. And I mean, he went down this line of docks, and some of them were incredibly shallow. He was pulling some nice largemouth out of those. So again, never underestimate how shallow bass can get. I have seen them where their backs are sticking out of the water when they're in some really, really shallow water. And I know they do that, but for some reason, I just had it in my head that you have to have more water than that underneath the dock for bass to be there. Not necessarily the case. And I thank Matt Heron for opening my eyes to that, because it really showed me that, you know, leave no stone unturned. I do that when I fish rivers and go down the bank. Like I said, I spend time with the trolling motor in the water and my bait staying wet. That's how I catch my fish. And I apply the same thing when I fish docks now. No dock is too shallow. You will be surprised what you can pull out of these docks in some really, really shallow water. And I served as a marshal for the first 3 days of the competition. What they do is, if you don't have a smartphone, they give you a device where you can log in the catches. You have to report their catches as they fish during the day. And they will go into the main information bank, and that's if you watch Bassmaster Live or watch the website during the day, they have a Bass Track feature where, as anglers catch fish, it tallies them up in real time with estimated weights, not official weights, but estimated weights. And the marshal and the angler basically agree on how much the fish weighs, and then you punch that in. If you have a smartphone, you can add notes and pictures and stuff like that. So
hold on. So why not just weigh the fish?
Some of them do. A lot of them don't. When I fish a tournament, every fish that comes in the boat, I immediately weigh it, mark it with a tag, put it in the live well, and I record that weight. So I know what my weight is. And then once we have a limit, we catch our 6th fish, I immediately weigh it. And if it weighs more than our smallest fish, I cull it out. So I've tried to just fish and get 5 in the box and not worry about it until then. But then you're spending 15-20 minutes of your day trying to fish those out of the live well one at a time, weigh them and mark them. They're so active at that point, they're so riled up, you're better off, I've learned, to weigh them as they're caught, mark them and put them in the live well. Then I know what I got. But a lot of these guys will just take 2 fish and hold them up and eyeball them and drop the one that they think is lighter and put the other one in the live well. A lot of those guys do that. And again, I'm not questioning anybody's method. These guys make a living doing this, and I got all the respect in the world for them for doing that. But I use a scale, and some of them do. You see a lot of guys watching the tournaments on Bassmaster Live. When they have the live coverage, you'll see a lot of guys weigh them. Use a balance beam. I use a balance beam. But a lot of the younger guys weigh them as they go now. And a lot of the old school guys just hold them up, look at them, and just eyeball them. But if you do a really, really good job as a marshal reporting the catches, you get invited to stay the 3rd day. When they cut the first 2 days, everybody competes. It's a field of 100 anglers, give or take. And after the weights are tallied, after the 2nd day, the top 50 in weight move to the 3rd day. And at the end of the 3rd day, the top 10 move forward to fish on Championship Sunday, which is the 4th day. It's their 4-day tournaments. And the guy who finishes on top, $100,000. So I marshaled for 3 days at both of these tournaments. And the second day of Cayuga Lake, I had a real special treat. Davey Height, Bassmaster Classic champion, Angler of the Year winner, just a real stellar fisherman, a great guy, served in the military. He was just a class act. I didn't know it at the time. I think Cayuga Lake was the next to last tournament that season, and I had him the second day of the tournament. So I was one of the last few people who ever got to ride in a boat with Davey Height, because the following year he retired from competition and he became a commentator for Bassmaster for all their tournaments, for the television show, for the tournaments, for the live coverage. So, I mean, when I sat in the boat that day with him, it was probably one of the last, you know, five marshals he had. That was a lucky draw. And I was a huge fan of Davey Height. He's a big deer hunter. We talked about deer hunting, and he's very, very good friends with another pro angler, Clark Wendelin, who's from Olander, Texas, and Davey's from South Carolina. But they were good friends and competitors, but they were really, really good friends. And Clark Wendelin's family is in the timber business. They own huge tracts of land, and they have a lot of property that they deer hunt. And they do high fence hunts, but they have a lot of property fenced in. And Davey has hunted there a few times. You've been to my house. You've seen that monster buck I got on the wall, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's scored 205. That's just insane. 6.5-year-old deer. And we were talking deer hunting. Now, that one, my property borders a deer farm. Caskey Mountain Deer Farm. People should look that up online. Caskey, C-A-S-K-E-Y, Caskey Mountain Deer Farm. This guy has the world record 1 year old. The world record 1 year old scored 357 inches. He's got the world record 2 year old. He's got the world record whitetail that was ever shot. And just insane what he raises on the backside of the hill that we live on. I worked for him for 15 years helping on the deer farm, and he offered me a hunt there. And I said, well, I don't know how I feel about a high fence hunt. He said, you will shoot the biggest deer of your life. I said, yeah, no kidding. I just don't know how I feel about that type of a hunt. I asked three of the best whitetail hunters I knew what I should do having that offered to me. And the first two said, if you don't do it, I won't say it to your face, but every time I look at you, I think, what an idiot. and that didn't sway me.
Was it a moral thing because of the fact that these deer were managed and grown and with a purpose, and they're all boxed in to a place? Is that why you don't look? Because it's removing some of the challenge? Well,
I said, you know, how much of a challenge is that? Well, I did a little research of my own, and the first people that did a high fence hunt, there was a property, they had 25 acres, all it was, 25 acres fenced in. They took five of the top whitetail riders and hunters that were just at the top of their game at the time, and they put them in this 25-acre high fence deer farm with these monster bucks in it for 3 days. Five of the best whitetail hunters on the planet. 3 days, 25 acres, five guys in there in 3 days. Nobody saw a single deer.
Oh.
I mean, these deer, whitetail, have incredibly keen senses. And apparently, when you box them in and you put people in there, they avoid them even more. I said 25 acres and five of the best deer hunters in the planet in 3 days never saw a single deer. Well, the guy that swayed me, the third guy I talked to, he says, well, how do you know how you feel about it until you try it? I said, well, I just think that I'm not sure how I feel. And he said, but how do you know until you try it? And he made a good argument. So I agreed to do it. Now, here's the thing. His area where he has these deer behind the fence is 100 acres. There was approximately 200 deer in there at the time, inside 100 acres. And he had blinds set up in different areas. I was overlooking a wide open field. Oh, yeah. And I saw a deer every day, and I saw some big deer. But he selected the deer that I was to shoot. So I had photos of it. He had pointed it out to me. He said, that is the deer you are allowed to shoot. I hunted in there 6 days till I got a shot at this one specific deer out of 200 inside 100 acres that had to come onto this wide open field that was 150 yards across where they would come out and graze. And so when this deer finally did come in, I'll tell you what, it was no different than anything else. My heart was pounding out of my chest. And you've seen the deer. So anyway, fishing with Davey Height. It's the second day of the tournament. He's catching nice fish on the upper end grass flats. Same area Kevin Van Dam is fishing and a whole bunch of other guys are fishing. And it was a very popular area because it was a shallow, grassy end of the lake. And a lot of guys were there for the largemouth. And Kevin Van Dam ended up winning that tournament. Jordan Lee finished second. Jordan Lee was in position to win and Van Dam pulled it out at the end. And he told Jordan Lee on the weigh-in stage, you're going to have your time. And of course, Jordan Lee has gone on to win back-to-back classics and has had a huge career and still having a huge career. But fishing with Davey Height that second day, we were talking deer hunting. And keep in mind, this man is fishing for $100,000. Every cast counts, and we're talking about deer, and he's talking about hunting on Wendolin's property, and I think he said his best one was 173, and I said the best one I've ever shot is 205. He stops mid-retrieve and turns around and looks at me and says, what did you say? I said, 205. He's like, do you have pictures of that? I said, oh, yeah. He's like, well, I want to see him. He stops fishing and we're sitting down and he's looking at the pictures on my phone. And I told him this was a high fence hunt that borders my property. I worked for the guy for 15 years. He wanted me to come and do a hunt. I said, so I did. I gave him all the information and I don't know. I got to go talk to this guy. See if Davey Height ever came and did a hunt. I talked to him last week and he said the last 4 or 5 years he's been booked solid. It's really been profitable for him. So a lot of people doing that. And just fishing with Davey Height, it was like fishing with an old buddy. We got along so well. He was a true gentleman and it was just a blast spending the day in a boat with this guy who's a classic champion, angler of the year winner, and watching how he approached fishing a grass flat. I thought he'd use a Texas rig or something like that. He did not. He was putting a weight in the head of the worm, but putting the hook a little bit farther back so it would drop tail down, but it was an exposed hook. It's an eco rig, and he would prepare a lot of them on the deck so that they were ready to go because he went through a lot of worms. And like probably 3 out of every 5 casts, because of that open exposed hook, he was pulling grass off. I mean, 60% of his casts were getting fouled every cast. And he's just making little short pitches. But he was also catching a lot of chunky largemouth. So it worked for him. The third day, I drew Stephen Browning. Now, he's not on the Bassmaster Elite Series anymore. He moved over to the Bass Pro Tour, and he's done well there. And this is a guy who had won several Bassmaster tournaments, opens, and stuff like that. A good fisherman. If you don't know this about Stephen Browning, his son, Bo Browning, is now fishing the Bassmaster Elite Qualifiers to try to qualify for the Elite Series. And his son is a good fisherman. But back when I drew Stephen, his dad, to fish on Cayuga Lake as his marshal, he was in the third flight going out. There's fewer flights the third day. And his takeoff time was like 6:40, something like that. And so I'm waiting in the parking lot for him to show up then. And it's like 25 after 6 and he's nowhere to be seen. So you get their cell number. So I put a call into him and he answers the phone. Hello? I said, Stephen? He goes, yeah. I said, I'm at the launch. Your flight takes off in 15 minutes. He goes, holy crap, what time is it? And I'm thinking, oh, great. I draw the one guy that oversleeps. I said, you're taking off in 15 minutes. Where are you? He laughs. He goes, I'm pulling in the parking lot. He's pulling my leg. Totally.
He got you.
Totally got me.
He got you.
All right.
100%. I've done that before to people. It's so much fun. You should do that. I bet you'd get a kick out of yourself.
He totally got me. And because he answered the phone sounding like I woke him up. He probably knew why I was calling. But this is a guy, apparently, he's got everything dialed in to the second. It was so, and again, less boats that third day. He pulled into the parking lot, backed up to the spot, dropped his boat in, parked his truck, came back to the dock, hopped in the boat, idled through the check-in, and off we went. It just click, 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 click. No wasted time. Now, a little background on Stephen Browning. Years ago, he entered, they had an Ironman competition it was televised on TV. Big deal. They used to do it every year, and they get so many contestants. And I didn't follow it, but I catch the updates because I knew Stephen Browning was in it. And I'm like, he's doing an Ironman competition. That's cool. Now, this guy is really, really fit. Zero body fat. He's just a very, very fit person, which helps him with his fishing competition. Well, he ended up winning the Ironman competition. And what you have to understand about me is I follow the professional bass fishing circuits like everybody else follows football, baseball, basketball. I know the anglers. I know their wives, their kids' names, their families, where they live, what they drive, who their boat sponsor is. It's the one sport I follow. So he hops in the boat that morning. Now, this guy won an Ironman competition. He hops in the boat with a cup of coffee in one hand and a bear claw in the other. I'm like, breakfast to champions, I suppose.
He was hungry, Roy. Stop judging.
Yeah. But I talked to him about the Ironman competition. He goes, you remember that? I said, man, I have followed your career from day one, which he appreciated. And he was a good fisherman. The guys that make the third day, they're automatically getting a $10,000 check. He was like down in the 30s in the standings, but you fish that third day, you got the opportunity to raise yourself in the standings, get more points for the Angler of the Year race and qualify for the Bassmasters Classic. So that was his goal that day, move up in the standings. Now, keep in mind that he is fishing, he's competing that day for 100 grand, just like Davey Height was, fishing for $100,000. And all he wanted to talk about was that day back home in Arkansas, his wife and son, who was in high school at the time, were fishing a local derby. And he was like, I wonder how they're doing. I wonder how they're doing. And at the end of the day, when he pulled back to the ramp, he got right on his cell phone to see how they had done in their derby for like $200. He's getting a check for 10 grand. And he's more concerned about how they did in their local, derby back at home. So now his son, Bo, has since, like I said, gone on, and he's a professional angler fishing the Bassmaster Opens. So interesting aside to Stephen Browning, and he did well in that tournament as well. Those are the three guys that I rode with and got acquainted with in that Cayuga Lake tournament. But the following year, I served again as a marshal for the St. Lawrence River when they were up there. The lake was off limits. So they could go to where the river goes into the lake, but they could not go into Lake Ontario itself. So they had to stay in the river. Now, I'm a Nitro Bass Pro Shops guy. The first day, I got the dream pick. I got Ott Defoe. And a couple of years later, he won the Bassmasters Classic. But this, of all the guys in that field, Ott Defoe, big Christian fisherman. He's won a lot of different accolades, a lot of different tournaments. And just if I had my choice, he would have been my number one pick. And out of the blue, that's who I get. And that tournament, my tournament partner got selected as a marshal too. So we roomed together and we compared notes every day with who we got drawn with. He's like, who'd you get the first day? I said, I got Ott Defoe. He's like, get out of here. I said, who'd you get? He got his dream pick, Greg Hackney. Of all the 100 guys in that tournament, if he could have picked one, the first day we both got the one guy we wanted more than anybody else. So we were psyched. And this was this time of year. It was July when they had that tournament up there in the St. Lawrence. And they said some of the bass could still be bedding. So in our pre-tournament meeting for the marshals, they said, if your angler is bed fishing, you must confirm that the fish is hooked in the mouth. All right. Fish can't be snagged. They have to be hooked inside the mouth, and they have to show you that. Do not be intimidated by your angler. Tell them, I need to see where that hook is, and they have to show you. So I get Ott Defoe the first day. And again, most of these guys are running their boats now with a single console. So the passenger is getting all that wind. And of course, these boats with, you know, all 19, 20, 21 foot bass boats with 250 horse outboards, most of them Mercury outboards. Thank you. But I'm in Ott Defoe's Nitro Z21 with a 250 horse Mercury outboard. And beginning of that tournament, he was leading the Angler of the Year race. So we're in the boat in the morning, and here comes the camera crew and a guy with a microphone to interview him. So I just try to stay out of the way. As soon as we're done with that, we're waiting for them to start the different flights. He goes, oh, I got to run back to my truck. I forgot something. So he idles over to the dock. He said, just, can you hold my boat here? I'll be right back. I said, sure. Runs up over the bank into the parking lot, goes to his truck, comes back with a full face motorcycle helmet, hops in the driver's seat behind the console and pulls away from the dock. And I look at him. I said, we taking a long run? He's like, yeah. I'm like, great. So there I am, taking wind at 72 miles an hour for an hour. He ran all the way up to the mouth of Lake Ontario and was fishing crystal clear water in this bay. And there's a ton of current.
Can I interrupt you for a minute?
Yeah.
Is it good etiquette to have an extra helmet on the boat for your ride along in those situations? Like that guy, he happened to have a full face helmet for himself. He was fine, but you were not fine for an hour going 70. What do you do? Just put your back to the wind and just look out the back of the boat when he's doing that? Or you take it right to the face? What are you doing?
Nope, take it right to the face. I had a sun buff and all that stuff. You just
do you have one?
Put down as tight as you can and you take it.
So when you go full bore across the lake, do you wear a full face helmet?
No. No, I have in tournaments like way early in the year when it's a frosty cold morning and you're not going to be, you know, when you wear the helmet and you get to the other end of the lake and your head is fine, but you go to stand up and your legs are stiff and your arms don't work because the air temp was 40 degrees and you just ran full bore the length of the lake.
What would the wind chill be at that point? I'm sure it was down even at 40.
Yeah.
Now I'm curious. I'm going to flip for those of you watching at home. Let's see here. 40 degree.
65 miles an hour in my boat. While you're figuring that out.
Wind chill.
We get to the spot where he's decided to start. It's a back bay area. There's no current in there. The water's crystal clear and it's only 3 foot deep, but he's pulling fish out of here. It's, you know, big smallmouth, big largemouth. He got a limit in short order, but he wasn't really happy with the weight he had. So he wanted to go try to find some bigger fish.
If it's 40 degrees outside, wind speed 65, wind chill is 24 degrees.
Fair enough. Yeah. And that's what it feels like, because you go to stand up and your legs are stiff, man, and you got to loosen up your arms that you can't. Your hands are cold. You know, it's rough, but we love it. We got to this section where he went to another area to try to cull up, and he did. He culled some nice largemouth there. We're fishing down this one stretch. And again, it's a big, huge backwater area. Grass overhanging the bank, willow trees. I mean, it just got largemouth written all over it. But there's this one huge willow tree in the back of this pocket, and he's working his way towards that willow tree. And we're laughing and joking all day, got along like old high school buddies. He's a great, great, tremendous angler. And underneath this willow tree, there's a box frame for a mattress. And I'm looking at it. What is that thing sticking up? And as we get closer, and I see it, and I said, is that a box frame for a mattress underneath that willow? He goes, yep, it's what it looks like. So I jokingly got my official voice, and I said, well, just so you know, if you catch a fish there, I'm going to consider that bed fishing, and you'll have to be hooked in the mouth. Thank goodness he laughed. He did. He said, okay.
Roy's got jokes.
That's fair. But yeah, he never caught a fish off it. So we were cool. But I really had a blast with him. That was just one of my all-time heroes because of the way he represents himself. And he's got tons of integrity, just a great guy. And I got to spend a day with him in his boat. Awesome. Now, my tournament partner, fished with Greg Hackney. Oh, he had some stories. Hackney, I said, how was your day? He goes, he's an animal. I said, what? He said, he's crazy. He's 100 miles an hour, and it's just crazy. He ran all the way up to the mouth of the St. Lawrence, and at one point, it was a little misty and rainy that morning, so we all had bibs on, rain jackets. It warmed up later in the day, so you just got a hoodie on with you still got your bibs on, and most of the time, you're just sitting down in the passenger seat trying to stay out of the way. So my partner's sitting there. They get ready to move to another spot. Hackney says, I'm just going to change out the water in my live wells. Well, when we do that, we hit the pump out, pump the water out to a certain level, and then we just bring in fresh water, circulate it, and then head down the lake. Apparently, that's not what Hackney does. He pumped it out, but then he opened both live well lids, starts the outboard, guns it in reverse, floods the back deck, which fills up the live well. He said, I'm sitting in the seat. I had no idea. What's he starting the motor for? He's got to put water in. He guns it in reverse, and he floods the back deck, which this wall of water comes over the back seat, right down my partner's bibs, soaks him. Hackney just slams the live well lid shut, jams it in forward, and they go flying down the lake. No explanation. That's just how he feels. He saves a lot of time, I guess.
Yeah, that's what I figured. Sounds like it would. Was your partner upset that he got wet in his bibs?
Oh, yeah. He was soaked for the rest of the day.
Was he angry?
No, he was like, you don't say anything. You just go with it.
I'm not hearing anything about having spare clothes in either of these instances. Like, you were out there on this 70 mile an hour run. You had, you think you would have brought like an extra layer with you or something. And this guy, he gets water down his bibs. He doesn't keep, you guys don't keep a bag of dry clothes on the boat.
The anglers do in case they fall in.
Well, you're an angler.
Yeah. I didn't carry extra clothes to the tournament to put in the boat.
Right. Yeah. I don't know, just Monday morning quarterbacking here. It's on.
it's a learning experience. But when you ride with these guys, it's cool because you have a front row seat to see how they approach the same situations that you face. One of the most interesting days I had was day two of that St. Lawrence event because I drew another. If I had my top five to pick out of those 100 guys, this guy would have been number two, Edwin Evers. And I drew him for the second day. My partner couldn't believe it. Another Bass Pro Nitro guy, Mercury outboard, Edwin Evers. And this guy had already won a classic. And I'd always heard that he was an intense competitor. Oh, man, I had a front row seat to that. Now, keep in mind, when we were there at the St. Lawrence the previous year, when they had been at the St. Lawrence, Edwin Evers won the event. So all eyes are on him in this event to do a repeat. He's the defending champion. And day one, he was in the top 10. He was in contention for the win again. So when I rode with him the second day, I'm like, holy cow, he's in the top 10. He's going to win again, you know? And I got in the boat with him. And because he comes in early, he stays at the campground, he's there, 45 minutes before his flight number. So we're just sitting in the boat and it's all, so tell me a little bit about yourself, And so we're getting acquainted. I told him about the article that was written the year before with Don Barone. And interestingly enough, let me back up. When I was with Ott Defoe, these guys are fishing for $100,000. All right. First day I'm fishing with Ott Defoe, and he's like, you know, you got to record my fish catches, right? I said, yep, I'm all set for that. I said, I'm used to counting fish anyway. I count all my fish and done it for years. Matter of fact, Don Barone wrote an article on me for Bassmaster website when I broke 25,000. He stops fishing, just like David Height, turns to me and goes, you're that guy? And I said, you read that? He goes, yeah, I read that. I thought that was really cool. That's who you are? I said, hey, I'm a small town boy who counted his fish, okay? You're Art Defoe, one of my heroes. He's like, no, but that's really cool, man. I respect you for doing that. That's awesome. So I couldn't believe he'd read the article, but he had. And so riding with Edwin Evers, we're just making small talk in the morning, getting acquainted. And I'm like, this guy is really cool, until competition starts. And oh man, was he. And he was the most intense guy I've ever been in the boat with, of all the guys I've ridden with. Intense is the word. I asked him first thing. I said, are you running a long ways? Because of my experience the day before. And he said, nope, I'm making a very short run. I see. And he said, I can see the spot I'm going to fish right from here. I'm like, cool. All right. This will be an easy ride. And we ran to a spot, and right off the bat, he puts a 2-pounder in the live well, and he looks at me and he winks. He goes, we'll get rid of him right away. And because he had a 20-pound bag the day before.
Mm-hmm.
We went the next, after that fish, that was like in the first 5 minutes, he went 4 hours without a strike, and the wheels started coming off. And he just got very, there was an urgency. And the cool thing for me was I got to experience one of the best there is in the world under extreme pressure when nothing was going right, and how he reacted to that. It was cool. He stayed under control, but he started running spot to spot. He started running and gunning because that spot they were shut down on. He had a lot of spots, and I tell you, we hit them all. But we're running his nitro 72, 75 miles an hour up this river, and he's not watching where he's going. I am, because I'm seeing boats crossing in front of us. I'm like, boat wake. He's looking to the left and he's looking to the right, doing 72 miles an hour, not watching where he's going. And we almost, there was geese on the water. And when you approach that fat, they're not used to that. They see a boat coming. So next thing they know, it's on top of them. They're trying to lift off the water. We bounced one off the windshield. Oh, what was that? And I'm like, that was a goose. You didn't see it? He says, no, I'm looking to see who's on my spots. That's what he was concerned about. He's looking at all the spots he's running by because there's a boat on him. He's trying to figure out who's on his spots, not watching for boat wakes. There's a buoy coming up, and I'm going, buoy coming up, and almost hit it, swerved hard. Thanks. You know, yeah, you're welcome. You might want to watch where you're driving. But we got to a spot out in the middle of the channel, and the current was so swift. He had a hole there he wanted to hit. He basically dropped the trolling motor, make one cast, you're past the spot because of all this current. I couldn't believe how this current was ripping in the middle of this river. And then it must have been a hump or something where the current accelerated. One cast, catch a fish, throw it in the live well, crank the outboard, idle up above it. He's like, just keep your vest on. I'm leaving mine on because I get one cast. Idled up, shut off the big motor, hopped on the front deck, made a cast, hooked up, get it in the box, hop in the seat, crank the outboard, idle up, and four casts, four drifts, he had his limit. Then he settled down a little bit, and he did actually cull once or twice before the end of the day, and he said, I'm not going to make the top 50, you know, I'm going to be going home. But he did make the 50 cut, and he got to fish the third day, got a check for 10 grand. But he was one of the most intense competitors. When the fish stopped biting, he got really, really intense. And he was just trying to make it happen, and it wasn't happening. He got real antsy, but he kept it together, and he pulled it out, got a limit, and culled. He salvaged the day. At the end of the day, he was apologetic to me. You know, I said, hey, I'm real sorry if I got a little snippy and that. I said, hey, you've got nothing to apologize for. I said, I got to spend a day in the boat with one of the icons of the sport that I look up to, and got to see how you respond in a situation where your fish have left. I run into that, and I know how I approach it. And I said, I got to see how one of the best in the world does it, and you pulled it out. So I said, you got nothing to apologize for. You're trying to feed your family. I'm on vacation this week. So for me, it was really, really cool. You owe me no apology whatsoever. Just a handshake and, you know, thanks for the ride, Edwin. And then the third day, I drew Bernie Schultz. Now, this is a guy from Florida who he almost always up north places in the top 10. He did the year before, and he did the year I rode with him. He fished the final day in the top 10. The thing about Bernie Schultz, at the time, He was in his mid-60s, I believe. He's 70 this year, still competing. Rick Klun is 77 this year, still competing. Bernie Schultz is another one of those guys who's very, very fit. He was in his mid-60s at the time. We ran all the way to the mouth of Lake Ontario, an hour, doing 72 miles an hour in his Ranger, and he didn't wear a helmet. We ran all the way up there, and he had a pocket off to the side out of the main flow of the current where there's all these rock islands. And again, back in there, it was maybe 4 or 5 foot deep. He was making long, long casts with the topwater all day. And the thing about Bernie Schultz is I watched the way he worked. Now, this guy's been a professional angler for over 40 years. He didn't fish any different than the way we do. He was taking, it wasn't a Zara spook, but it was very similar. And he was just very slowly and patiently and methodically walking the dog with that all day, occasionally giving it a pause, letting it sit, working it again. Had a camera crew on him because he was in the top 10 and they had followed him. Happened to be the camera crew that followed him was the boat with Davey Height, who it was his first year as a Bassmaster on air commentator. And before we left the spot to head back to the weigh-in, he had burned a lot of gas. So we ran to a gas dock and the camera boat came in behind us because they needed gas too. So they're gassing up the boats and I recognized Davey Height and I said, "Hey, Davey, how you doing?" He goes, "Pretty good." I said, "I was your marshal at Cayuga Lake last year on the second day. We talked deer hunting." He goes, "Oh yeah, I remember you." And then he asked me, "What's your bass count up to?" Because he'd read the article. He knew all about that too. So he was curious what my bass count was up to. To have these guys interested in that was a real trip for me. So, but Bernie Schultz, he would fish that topwater so patiently the entire day, and he was getting about one bite an hour, but every smallmouth he put in that boat was 4 pounds and over. It was just a really neat day. And this guy in his mid-60s, all right, all he consumed that entire day, he had a bottle of water. I saw him take 2 sips off it the entire day. How do you maintain like that? I mean, years ago when I started fishing tournaments, I would not take anything to eat or drink. It's all about catching fish. You know, I'll eat or drink on the way home. And I have learned as I've aged that in order to compete at the level I want to compete at, I've got to maintain and fuel myself and keep myself hydrated and do all that during the day. I see when you watch the tournament live coverage, a lot of the younger guys in their 20s now are doing that. They're drinking water. They're eating nutrition bars. They're eating good, healthy stuff. And they're fueling their bodies all day. Yet these old school guys like Bernie Schultz, 2 sips of water all day. It's amazing. It amazes me how they maintain the competitive ability and edge that they have to still be making a living competing like that today. So that's my experience with 6 different professional anglers across 2 years and seeing how they approach it, what I learned from them, and just the unique experiences I had with these guys that amazingly knew about me and what I'd accomplished, and pretty cool. So I highly recommend the Bassmaster Marshal program. They need marshals at every event. Interestingly enough, that one at the St. Lawrence, they didn't have enough marshals. They reached out to the local high school anglers to fill the field with marshals, you know, for that event, because they just didn't have it. And I think sometimes you see boats with only the angler in them, that a lot of times they don't get enough people to marshal for these events. And it's a unique experience where you get a front row seat. It's like an 8-hour seminar and you're the only guy in the audience. It's a great way to get to know these professional anglers and you learn a lot from them. There's always good takeaways. I think it was like $150 when I did it, but you get all kinds of stuff from Bass. But you get shirts, you get hats, you get gift bags, you get all this stuff. They feed you. And I used to pay $150 for a one-day seminar where you got 1 hour from 4 different anglers, all right? 4 hours, $150. For the same $150, I spend 3 days in the boat with guys. You're talking 24 hours. There's not a better bargain on the planet, and they need marshals. So if you want to register as a marshal, everybody, go to Bassmaster.com and look for the marshal link or call 877-BASS-USA. And as always, we appreciate all the comments and all the guys that listen out there. I've said it before. The whole purpose of this podcast is to disseminate information which I've gathered over 40 years of keeping a highly detailed journal that's helped me become a better fisherman. And it's all about helping you learn how to tap into your angler within.